It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for being with me this morning. I sure appreciate you joining me. I'm going to talk this morning about a number of things. First is I'm going to talk about the cost to wildlife of all the flooding that we've seen throughout the lower Midwest, and there's still more to come because, after all, we're just now rolling into April. So wildlife, we hear about the cost in terms of dollars, buildings lost, roads going under, railroads being closed, transportation being interrupted. We hear about all those costs. We don't hear about the cost to wildlife, which is also a monetary cost, because as wildlife populations decline, we are not able to sell as many hunting licenses, as many fishing licenses, because we don't have the recreational opportunities. So there is a cost in terms of life of wildlife, and there's an economic cost, which is one of the reasons why the flooding that we are seeing and continue to see throughout much of the lower Mississippi Valley is really of enormous import to the future of hunting and fishing in this part of the country. And if you're a deer or a turkey or a quail or a pheasant, you're not doing very well when you have hundreds of thousands of acres underwater for weeks at a time in the lower Mississippi in the Yazoo Basin. They've got almost 500,000 acres that have been underwater. You have nowhere to go. So the flooding that's occurring increasingly, not only does it cause property damage, but it's a huge loss to wildlife. And unfortunately, the areas that are flooding are some of the last bastions of significant wildlife habitat. We've cleared or farmed most of the good land in America. Our river bottom lands, which also have been largely cleared and farmed, are the remaining lands where most of the wildlife concentrate, and it is the area, of course, which has such severe flooding. So it's a double whammy. The Corps of Engineers has set up these areas they try not to have them flood, but they set them up so that they flood now repeatedly, but it's also the place where wildlife has to gather. So when we have years like this of high water, there is a very, very significant cost to wildlife, and I would imagine in Illinois and Nebraska and throughout the lower Mississippi, we're going to see big losses in deer and turkey populations, and certainly in quail and pheasants as well. So moving on from flooding, it's more than just pictures of, you know, cars underwater. It's a terrible situation all the way around. I want to talk for a moment about something that came out, which got my attention recently, and if you're not a duck hunter, just skip over the next 45 seconds or so. But if you are, you'll find this maybe to be of interest. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, released the statistics for the season, 2017 season, 2018 is not out yet, on the total number of ducks shot. And what's very interesting here is that how things have changed. And they have changed in this way. The number three duck shot now in North America is a wood duck. 40 years ago, in many places, wood ducks could not be shot. They were an endangered species. They were a threatened species. Their populations have been absolutely decimated through the loss of the bottomland hardwood forest of the lower Mississippi and throughout the alluvial plain, river plains all across America. So this is a little bit of a conservation success story. So it's really not just about ducks, it's about conservation. The wood duck has rebounded from nearly being an extinct species to one now that is harvested. Over 1 million wood ducks were shot in 2017. And it shows what can happen when conservation groups, habitat management, come together to provide the habitat needed for a species to recover. And in the case of the wood duck, millions of wood duck boxes were put out, nesting boxes were put out. It became a national effort to to try and bring back the wood duck. And the wood duck was a species that was only located in the lower 48 or so, we thought. Now wood ducks are prevalent, nesting all the way up into 500 miles north of Winnipeg, up in the Paw and areas like that. You will find wood ducks nesting across Manitoba. They nest in Saskatchewan. They nest in Alberta. Wood ducks have expanded the range enormously, and their population today is at the highest level it's been since pre-settlement times. Initially, they were shot because of their extraordinary plumage for market hunting, for hats and things. And then as we cut down millions and millions and millions of acres of hardwood forests, we simply removed their habitat that they needed. But the success story is that wood ducks have adapted. We provided them with nesting structures, and their population has taken off unbelievably to where now they're the third most harvested duck species in all of North America, from where 50 years ago they couldn't even be shot. And then we had a limit of one a day, and then two a day, and now it's three a day. So that is a conservation success story that we should keep in mind as we sort of from time to time wring our hands over all the obstacles that we have coming our way and all the species that are in trouble. We can point to the fact that we also can bring back species from time to time. And the wood duck is definitely one of those successful species that we've been able to resurrect from the point of view of nearly having been extinct. It also, though, points out just how significantly other species have declined. The way down the list of birds that were harvested are pintails and lesser scaup. 40 years ago, the mallard was the number one duck, followed by the pintail, followed by the lesser scaup. And today, they aren't even in the top five. They are way down the list, with only 10% if 3.5 million mallards were shot in 2017, only 300,000 scaup were shot. This tells you just how far these populations have declined and how little has been able to do about it. In the 1950s, the breeding ground surveys would have indicated a scaup population of around 9 million breeding pairs. As recent as the 70s, there were over 7 million breeding pairs, and now we're down around 3 million breeding pairs and falling. The pintail population, same thing. In the 50s, the breeding population was estimated at over 10 million breeding pairs, and it's not uncommon now to see years where we have maybe 2.5, 2.3, or 3 million breeding pairs. So their populations of pintail and scaup have just plummeted. And against this backdrop, as I mentioned a moment ago, we've seen a dramatic increase in a population like the wood duck. So we have huge problems for waterfowl in the prairies, and those problems are significant in that the hunting traditions of America were built really around mallard hunting, canvasback hunting, pintail hunting, and scaup hunting. And three of those four species are in very serious trouble. And have not shown any ability to see population increases in recent years when we've had favorable habitat. So it's not all great news. The wood duck success story is to be heralded. It goes to show that North America's Amazon, the prairie region of the United States and Canada, the prairie potholes, there's a lot of work to be done if we are indeed to see sustainable flights of waterfowl in the coming years, as three of the four top species in historic terms are all in really pretty significant decline. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors, and when I come back, I'm going to talk about predators and what's taking place on the East Coast with a species that at one point also was in peril, has made a remarkable comeback, and now it too is facing challenges from predators. And then I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming budget and what it might mean for conservation. Thank you so much for listening. You are listening to Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and thank you for being with me. And as I promised before the break, I'm going to go to the East Coast, and I'm going to talk about what has been a phenomenal success story, but now one where we're finding very significant challenges. And it's with a bird species that many of you may never have seen because they are not frequent flyers throughout the rest of America, and that is the eider duck. And the eider is iconic on the East Coast for its, well, it goes back to the beginning of the settlement of the United States and Canada. Eiders have been a very important bird species on the East Coast, and they suffered huge population declines. And then their populations came roaring back due to a bunch of conservation work and also restrictions on the harvest of eiders. And what we learned about eiders is that they are very long-lived and that they may not breed for 3 or 4 years, but they can live for 15 or so years. So they're very long-lived ducks. And now something that's happened, which is just causing a collapse in their population, is predators. And maybe for a few minutes I ought to talk about predators and the scope of what's going on across all of North America and why bird species, so many bird species are facing challenges that they never did before, and that's because of predation. We have seen a phenomenal increase in the raptor population, the birds of prey, all of which is fantastic because it means that DDT is out of the system after all these years, and we have seen just a tremendous increase in the population of birds of prey. Well, they have to eat something. And the thing that they are most fond of eating, other than mice and things like that, are birds. So waterfowl populations of ground nesting birds, whether they be everything from sandpipers to pheasants to quail to grouse, all are being impacted by avian predators. And in the case of the eider duck, something is occurring that is transforming the landscape, and that is the seagulls, or the herring gull in particular, has moved in abundance and recovered into the black-backed gulls, which we don't have those in this part of the world, have moved into eider country and are destroying a great portion of the eider nests, along with raccoons, which were not native at all to the eider nesting world. Eiders nest in Maine, up Nova Scotia, up through Labrador, and they've been reintroduced also into Massachusetts. So they are up and down the East Coast, but they are finding out that there are four major predators that are now impacting common eiders, and they are the black-backed gulls, the bald eagles, mink, and otters. The recovery of the bald eagle population has made nesting extremely perilous for eiders, while mink and otters are now residing in eider nesting islands where in the past they were not even present at all. So we are seeing a change predator community across North America, which is impacting bird populations. But in the case of the eider, it is causing them to be in a situation where their populations once again are plummeting. The suggested solution is these nesting structures, which are being used for mallards, and you heard me talk a moment ago about wood duck nesting boxes. So they have come up with nesting structures for eiders where eiders can get in under them and lay their nests, lay their eggs and their nests, and try to be secure from avian predators. The only problem with this so far is that raccoons have been able to, they used blue pipe to create these nesting structures, and raccoons and black-backed gulls both keyed in on this blue pipe in a landscape of green and brown, and thought that was interesting because raccoons are curious. And lo and behold, they both found out this is where there's a meal. So the idea of blue plastic pipes serving as nesting structures, which the eider could climb under, is now being abandoned. And they are looking for more nesting structures that blend into the landscape better. And as I'm talking to you, I'm looking at a picture of a black-backed gull sitting on top of this new wooden nesting structure, which looks like a sort of like the top of a house. And it's just sitting on top waiting for the eider to come out from underneath so it can go in and steal the eggs. So across America, across North America, we have predator issues that we've never dealt with due to the incredible increase in prey bird populations. Also, the incredible increase in mammalian predators, particularly raccoons and skunks and otters, that are absolutely wreaking havoc on bird species that are not did not come through evolution to adapt with them. So I'll have more on this in the coming months and years maybe, but the eider population, after being heralded as a great success story, is now going backwards, and the result is because of predators. Next week I'll be back with much more on the Great Outdoors. I'm going to do an in-depth dive into the proposed budget and what this might mean for wildlife and fisheries across America. Bottom line is this. This is a statistic we should all remember. The U.S. government is spending about half the percentage on conservation today of its federal budget than it spent 30 years ago. So 30 years ago, if the federal budget was $100 million or $100, we spent 20% of it on fish, wildlife, and conservation. Today, if the federal budget's $100, we're spending $10 or 10% of it on conservation. So we have cut in half the amount of money from the federal budget to fund things like the Department of Interior, Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Land Management over a 30-year period. I'll talk more about that next week. We've got to somehow figure out how to reverse some of those trends, or we're going to continue to see a decline in our national parks and our infrastructure and our ability to enjoy our public lands. Thank you so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.